Welcome to our ADAA podcast on the developmental approach to treating anxiety and depression in the transitional years, which are ages 18 to 25. Today we're talking with Anne-Marie Albano, who is an associate professor of clinical psychology and psychiatry director, Columbia University Clinic for Anxiety and Related Disorders in New York City. And she's the author of many, many books. The most recent among them is You and Your Anxious Child, Free Your Child from Fears and Worries and Create a Joyful Family Life, with her co-author, Leslie Pepper. Welcome, Dr. Albano.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Let's start with your describing the so-called transitional years, or emerging adults ages 18 to 25. Just what makes this a separate or unique group?
Well, this is an interesting thing. A developmental psychologist, Jeffrey Jensen Arnett, about 15 years ago, started really coining the phrase emerging adulthood and looking at this age group roughly at the end of high school through to about 30 as being unique. Different from what we conceptualized in the past. No longer are kids finishing high school and launching into adult life the way they did in the 50s and the 60s. It's now much more of a period of discovery, of trying things out, of great uncertainty. At the same time, there's optimism. And there's a lot that goes on in this age group, moving in and out of home, staying a bit more dependent on parents, and not getting into the world in the way that they used to. So it's a unique time.
What about gender differences, male and female? Are there any?
At this point, what you see is from a mental health perspective, if there are disorders such as anxiety disorders or depression, we do tend to see in this age group girls or women seeking help more than men. And of course, the epidemiology, where in childhood there was pretty much equivalence in terms of presentation and disorders, except maybe conduct disorder. More boys would be diagnosed with that, or ADHD. Now we're seeing that, women are pretty much more represented in epidemiological samples. But as emerging adults, they're all emerging.
Okay. Now, focusing on treating anxiety, OCD, and depression, what is your approach in general? You've said that clinical syndromes take youth off their developmental trajectories early and persist in causing impairment and functioning over the long term. So how do you go about repairing this or getting youth back on the proper path?
Well, this is the thing. Emerging adulthood as a developmental stage is a normative thing, we think, or Dr. Arnett thinks. But the thing we have to bear in mind, especially with anxiety and depression, first of all, anxiety starts by age 5. There's plenty of data now. We know these disorders start early and they stay the long term. They become comorbid very quickly with one another, and depression sets by adolescence. The problem is, as soon as a disorder presents itself, a child is taken off of their developmental track. They're not keeping pace with their peers with the things kids, whether they're 5, 10, 15, or 20, are doing. They become different. So the thing that we have to do in treating these disorders, anxiety, OCD, and depression, is not just get rid of the symptoms and help the syndrome go under, and get control over anxiety and depression, let's say, but we also have to make sure we pay attention to functioning and putting these individuals, especially young adults, back on the path they need to be and next to their peers.
Okay, so getting them out in the world is a primary goal that wouldn't happen in younger groups of children. And so is that a difference in the way you treat them?
Right, there's a couple of differences. One is we are, unlike in the past where you focus on helping the child feel well, let's say, we want them to feel well enough to get out there and feel bad. And what I mean by that is to take on the things that other kids, other people their age take on, which might mean breaking up with somebody. It might mean having to have an argument with a teacher or a professor over a grade. It's doing all the things that the other kids have been doing all along, but you haven't because you've been withdrawn or avoidant due to your symptoms. The other thing that's different is we want parents involved. We don't think, actually, anyone should be treated in a vacuum. These young adults, especially those who are staying at home or back at home because they can't handle the world, have become dependent too much, and parents are taking over. They're doing things for their young adults that they shouldn't be doing anymore, calling professors, making excuses, arranging for doctor's visits. So we want mom and dad to become empty nesters, right? and to let go of the things that they've been doing and let their young adult take these on. So there's a lot of things that we're doing differently because it's a developmentally informed approach, but it's also a family informed approach where we're negotiating these relationships so that a young adult can be that, a young adult.
So treatment is individual, family-based, a combination, something else?
It's all of that. Okay. In the sense that we have a plan where we evaluate the level of disability, how much, whether it's anxiety, depression, and the way they co-occur, what's happening with that, and we'll prescribe cognitive behavioral therapy and or medication if that's necessary. We take a look at that, but the thing is, we also want to look at, in terms of developmental tasks, doing the things young adults do for themselves, managing their own emotions, taking responsibility for self-care, for getting into the world, for school, work. Are they doing these things? And if not, how much are the parents doing? So there may be family work. We call these transitional sessions where mom and dad and the young adult are in a room together and we are hammering out why you're hanging on too much to mom, why mom or dad are doing too much for you and not letting you. We get it all out there, a lot of communication and problem solving. And then a lot of our therapy is exposure-based or activation-based, meaning having the kids take on the things they need to do. And so that oftentimes occurs with group sessions that we have because we want them to have peer support. So while it sounds heavy, individual, family, and group, we will prescribe different components of this treatment based on the level of disability and the level of family involvement.
But when it comes to treatment for anxiety, OCD, and depression, are they different treatments or are they pretty much the same?
The conceptualization from a perspective that these are neurobiological disorders that may have had roots in genetics, temperament, and such, but the way that you think about the world, look at the world, the way you look at yourself and think about your future and your capabilities is really a cognitive event, right? And that behaviorally you've stopped doing things that solidify this. We take a cognitive behavioral approach, so that's consistent across everything. But if it's anxiety or OCD, we're doing exposure to what they're afraid of. And if it's depression, we're doing activating you to take action again and engage in the social world, do things for success and self-reward. So those are different in the way that they're done. And then the thing that also is common, though, across everything is how the parents have been involved with you in engaging with the disorder so that we can address that and change that.
Okay. So how do you personalize treatment or account for developmental milestones for each patient?
We are in the process because we've just got funding to develop more of the treatment and test the treatment. We're almost there to that point. But we also are developing a measure of emerging adulthood functioning, where we're looking at the different tasks of emerging adulthood and coming up with a rating scale for the young adults themselves and the parents as to how much this young adult is able to handle this task of emerging adulthood, from managing money responsibly to taking care of their own self-care, let's say, living on their own independently and traveling, things like that. And so what we're doing is we are making sure we define what the milestones are and define where and help the parents and the young adults understand what that means and seeing where there's too much of an interaction with the parents still doing the things that these kids should do. So the treatment is personalized based on, again, how much anxiety or depression is there that needs to be addressed, but then how much of an interaction between parents and the emerging adult is going on that sort of stifles development. Now, let me say something. I'm not blaming parents. And, you know, what we help everyone to see, the parents as well as the emerging adult, is that the parents have stayed involved in ways that have not allowed the emerging adult to move forward because they love these kids so much. It's really born out of their love and not wanting their son or daughter to struggle and suffer, but the nature of anxiety, OCD, and depression is one that it fools you into thinking the short-term solution is going to carry you forever, but it doesn't. The short-term solution of mom or dad helping with the applications or calling up the mentor or whatever, that doesn't really help in the long term. So we're helping parents to see that by systematically stepping out and helping the young adult to take over, even if they struggle with things, that's important, and that has to happen. And we personalize it according to how much that's going on.
If a patient has received previous treatment, does that factor into your treatment approach?
It may, because we need to know. We absolutely need to know if there's been previous treatments, to what degree they were successful, and for how long, and what were the elements of those treatments that were successful for the young adult, and what got in the way of maintaining the gains. And then if the treatments didn't go well, how many times that happened, where is the emerging adult and the parent's sense of optimism for what we could do, or hopelessness, because we want to address those things.
Could you address co-occurring issues such as substance abuse, which might really present in this age group?
This is actually an often co-occurring condition, and especially based on the nature of anxiety, kids learn by the middle teenage year that a substance, oftentimes nicotine, as well as alcohol or marijuana, will help them get into social situations or soothe them when they're anxious and upset. And then, of course, it is also a concomitant of depression, that in the short term, kids feel it relieves their depression a bit. But, of course, we know that it doesn't do that overall. So we see varying degrees of substance use and abuse, and then also there could be dependence. If substance problems are primary, we want that to be treated the first and the foremost, the focus of treatment. But a number of our patients in this age group have had significant treatment for this, and then they come to us when they've had sobriety for a period of time.
So a patient goes through treatment. How do you ensure the adherence? What's the best way that you recommend that your patients adhere to their treatment plan and move on?
Well, this is an interesting thing, and again, this is where we'll differ. We do not ascribe, and I actually don't ascribe to this in any sense, to the model that parents should not be informed about treatment and also part of informing the treatment on behalf of their children, adolescents, and in this case, young adults. So we work very much to develop a goal-oriented treatment in collaboration between the emerging adult and the parents, agree upon what the goals are going to be and how long it should take to reach each type of goal. We do respect confidentiality and of the emerging adult, and work on a plan for what is going to be discussed, and everything's discussed with the parents in the room, not that they, we have secret meetings or anything. That's not there. So what we do is adherence is, and whether they're following the plan, what's happening, is worked collaboratively with everyone, and then we're going to problem solve when adherence doesn't happen. What could we do differently, or help the family and the emerging adult do differently to get to the goals that they want to get to, rather than having non-adherence just be something that blows up and the parents throw their hands up and say, see, therapy doesn't work, and the teen throws their hands up, or the young adult saying, nothing's going to help me. No. We've got to have everybody on the same page and working together, and then we have better adherence.
And so what message would you want to leave with parents?
You know, the big thing that I found, and this, it goes back to early childhood, too, in parenting. Parents want to comfort, protect, and reassure. That's, as good parents, that's what we all want to do. And love our children so much. What happens is that because we fear the consequences in advance for what a negative situation could be, whether it's failing a test or not getting a job in, or doing poorly on an interview with a potential supervisor, or whatever these things. Parents tend to worry about how this will impact their son or daughter, and especially impact them at emotional level. And they have the attitude that each situation, especially as kids get through adolescence and towards adulthood, Each situation is too big to fail. The message I want parents to hear is that your kids do have to struggle, and with you there in their corner as a coach for helping them to problem solve, but helping them to come up with solutions, they're going to take more ownership. They're going to feel better, even if it doesn't go the way they want, on being ready to deal with that aspect of it. And that's where growth comes. So there isn't anything too big to fail in development in this way. If the parents are ready to be there in a way that is facilitative for their teen or their young adult, but it's the teen who has responsibility and is really driving the whole process.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Albano. That's very helpful and informative. We've been speaking with Dr. Anne Marie Albano, and this is Jean Tycro for ADAA.